Thank you, Rob. I'm fortunate. I have excellent neighbors, and one of them is an exceptional cook, and I would like to thank her for that publicly. Rob. Well, thank you for having me back, and I'm going to open with a word of prayer, if you don't mind. Lord, you're so gracious to us. We had praise songs today. We have a chance to be here together in your house. We've been blessed. Sometimes you choose to take areas of your church and not bless it. And they have trials and problems. And those of us that are where we are still blessed have an obligation, and I know that you're pleased when we can reach out and help. I want to thank you, Lord, for the ability to be able to help those that are in need. And I ask, Lord, for your grace on anything that I say today and on the hearts of those that are listening. In Christ's name, amen. So, we're going to start out. I'm not a public speaker, so we'll try it this way. There's a couple verses that have come to me over the last, month or two, a couple months. And I'm going to guess that you guys are all familiar with the idea of being a prepper. Okay, and that goes from tinfoil hats to just trying to keep a few extra things around your house to a variety of other ways that this goes. And one of the things that I have taken away, I've been to North Carolina 3 times now, and possibly will return. But one of the things that I was struck with was the things that people valued that were taken away like that in the storm. And more importantly, the neighbors that came to help. My first trip down was with Samaritan's Purse. I got down there right day after the storm. I'd signed up as soon as the storm hit. And on day one, they had 60 volunteers from out of state that had signed up and come in. They had 470 walk-ins from the local community, 1 to 3 hours away. Day two, I don't know. Day three, I don't know. Day four, they had 1,100 walk-ins. On Saturday, the last day I was there, and I have a picture, but it's not in this group that I'd given Rob, the Samaritan's Purse partners with a local church as best they can, and Boone, North Carolina, where I was located, is where their headquarters are located, so they directly partnered with Church Alliance Bible Fellowship that most of the members of the staff attend. It's a decent-sized church, and on Saturday, they had over 1,600 walk-in volunteers. These are just local people that show up for half a day, 2 days, go through the routine training, put on an orange shirt, and go out and clean out the stinkiest mud you smelled in a while. They cut trees. They help people clean stuff up out of their houses. And there's a number of younger folks. I'm going to say 18 to 25, and I guess I'm showing my age with that. But there's also a number of older folks. I'm 26, if you will. And thank you. I appreciate that. I'm holding up well. But there's a number of folks that are a little older, and I've heard different people say, well, what can I do? If I took everyone in this church that's sitting in this auditorium right now, down there would be a job that everyone would be able to do. So yes, there are things that you can do, and yes, I'm encouraging you in one way to become more directly involved. It's literally the gift that keeps on giving. People say, oh, you're so nice. It's like, no, I get way back more than what I give. Sometimes it's emotional. So one of the verses that's come to me, two of them, and I'm going to add a little light here. My 26-year-old eyes. So, this is 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 11 and 12. And this is for the preppers in you, but it's also for each one of us. And I just reading through Thessalonians, and it's like, oh my. So, make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders, and so that you will not be dependent on anybody. So, that's the prepper verse that I have, that I'd highlighted in here. And I've volunteered with Samaritan's Purse for several different disasters in different stages. But the impact that these storms have, the impact that these wildfires have, are devastating to the folks that go through it. Your entire life is gone. In some instances, everything you have. And a couple places down in Asheville, North Carolina, not only is your house gone, your car gone, all your pictures, there are several instances where the flood moved the course. I can't remember the name of the river, but the flood literally moved the course of the river, and now your land is gone. You don't even have the property that you had. And that's become a bit of a problem. Next thing, in their infinite wisdom, the federal government has decided that this is now a floodplain and you can't build on it. So even if you do own it, you can't do anything with it. And I'm not going to go into FEMA bashing. There's a variety of stories that a number of people are going to tell you. I don't have anything specifically, directly that I can relate to you, that I saw this guy do this or I saw that do that. I did not, in my three trips down here, about 3 weeks, did not see a single FEMA person or truck. I saw nothing. I heard stories of a couple places where they would show up, drop off paperwork, and we'll be back and not come back, or else come back and say, there's nothing we can do to help you. So we've become a society that tends to rely on the government to take care of our roads, our schools, our education, and to help us out in these disasters. And that's kind of where this prepper verse comes from, so that you will not be dependent on anybody. Now, we're all a community. We all rely on each other. I rely on Rob and Jackie. There's a number of things that they do, and then I try and help them out. We are a community, but we're supposed to be somewhat independent. And I'm going to show you some pictures now of my second trip down. The first trip I went down, and we had done some mud out, cutting some trees and helping some people. When I was leaving, I realized, and that was when I came back to you guys and told you that I was thinking of going back down, I'd realized that there were a lot of things that were undone that I wanted to try and help finish. So we went back down and we were able to help three families, specifically a few others, but specifically three families. And I was flipping through real quickly, but Paul, in several of his different letters, complimented the various churches, the Church of Thessalonica, the Church at Ephesus, on all the support that they gave him, the help that they gave him, not just prayers, but physical support. You guys were very generous. You were incredibly generous. I was a little overwhelmed. Several other churches contributed. A number of individuals contributed. And I had figured that I was going to start out with $1,500, $1,600. And a pastor friend of mine told me, the Lord's going to give you what he chooses, and he'll spend it. And the Lord kind of overwhelmed me. It's a little frightening. But the Lord is spending it. The Lord is putting it where it needs to be. I still have some funds remaining. At this point, I haven't decided exactly what we're going to do with them, but I hope that you'll feel that the money you gave, the prayers that you put behind it were well spent, and that we're able to help people directly rather than giving it to some nameless organization. So what do I do with this? We're set up there. All right. This is my second trip down. This was right after I left. I talked to you guys on the 3rd, I believe it was, and I departed on the evening of the 8th, arrived there on the 9th. And if I can operate this device, we'll see what comes up. And I'll let the master here. Okay, there we go.
That's forward. That's back. Forward. Back.
Yes, sir.
Forward.
Back. Yes, sir. I'll probably need another training session, but let's see what comes of this. All right. So this is a trailer that we had helped with a mud out, which means you clean the mud out from underneath it, and they'd gotten about 18 inches of water up beyond the level that you see here into the first floor of the house. And it was there for about 3 or 4 days. These are local North Carolina hillbillies. They're really nice folks. John works doing construction and building decks, but he doesn't have a regular job, so he's kind of busy. His wife helps out at one of the local banks, I believe. So this is what we found when I went back down on the 9th, and you can kind of see underneath the trailer that there are concrete pylons. They had put the hurricane tie-downs on this mobile home trailer when it was set at 75 by 14, and the hurricane tie-downs are the reason that trailer's still sitting there, because the floodwaters came up. Anything in the neighbor's yard ended up underneath that trailer. So when we were down there with Samaritan's Purse, we cleaned it out. I had met a fellow named Mike Young. I believe I told you about that. He's a contractor from Ohio. Mike, Ed, his worker, and I, the three of us went down, and we're going to clean out, insulate underneath this mobile home, pan off the insulation with tarps, with fabric, and then we're going to go ahead and put skirting up. So let's see where we go here. There we go. So this is the front yard. You can kind of see on, as I'm looking at it, photograph left, that would be the tail end of Mike's trailer. And he went ahead and took his trailer down. This is more in line with what Mike does. I do restoration work on older homes. Mike does siding, roofing, and things of that sort. And he had tools that were more suited. So this is the front yard. And although you can't really see real well in the photograph, directly behind that mobile home, photograph center, is the stream that came up and flooded their yard. And it was, I want to say, about 5 feet deep in their yard. This is outside the house. We have started putting down the skirting. The skirting is black. We got all new metal. And then the clear white 2x4s underneath are the bottom framing that we're going to tie the bottom of the skirting to. Coming around, and you can kind of get an idea of the stuff sitting around in the yard. Some of it was left from the flood. Some of it has been moved around. The little outbuilding sheds where he has some tools stored. And there we go. This is John and Chrissy's wife, and you can kind of see the tail end of the trailer there. They're standing right in front of the hitch, and we've got that place completely skirted in. John and one of his cousins, I believe, came down, and they did most of the insulation underneath the trailer. We provided all the materials, and they did most of the insulation under the trailer. He crawled underneath and did most of that. We pulled out a lot of old piping and other things that were under there, but when the waters had come underneath, it just soaked and pulled the insulation and all the ductwork from the heating systems down. So John's come up with a different heating system. He doesn't need the ductwork. But that's one of the places that we were able to help with. Another place, and this doesn't seem like a lot until you realize it's people's livelihoods, there were two other homes that were located fairly close one to another, and both of them were low-lying. They're in a place called Deep Gap, and it's down the bottom You go across, go underneath the Blue Ridge Parkway, wind your way down a bunch of switchbacks about 2.5 miles, and you're down the bottom of a valley. And, of course, that's where the streams are at. Stream came up, flooded across. This particular lady has a couple of llamas, miniature donkeys, horses, but she had 85 chickens, and she was using the chickens. She was egging the chickens and selling the eggs in town, and she was also salvaging the llama wool and selling that. And there's herself and her young son. So when the flood came in, she lost 60-some chickens. They were gone. I don't know how many of them got out, and the coyotes got them, but at any rate, she lost 60-some of her chickens. She lost two of her roosters. The llamas and the others got out, and they were able to get them back. So what we're doing here, we build a pole barn to enclose the animals, and then they're going to go ahead and fence that area in. So that's Mike and Ed framing a pole barn. Now, these guys were good at it. They've done this a lot. In 6 hours, they dug the holes, set the posts, framed, cooperate. There you go. That's kind of inside. Framed and got this whole thing ready for siding in 6 hours. I sat around and said, I'll stay out of your way. You guys know what you're doing. You tell me what you want the board cut at, I'll cut the board. And so that's how that worked out. That is what they did in 6 hours. So, and it's square and it's straight. You can tell that because when you put the roofing on, that's your test of truth. So that shed is 18 by 8. A little over 8 foot high with the rake, with the slope. Property one. Cooperate here. All right. Now, at one point, we had to run down to Tennessee, which is not that far away. It's kind of like running to Ohio. We had to run down Tennessee to pick up materials. On the way down, the main highway, I believe it was Route 421, was closed, and we had to run through that. The police down there detoured us, and this is one of the things we saw in the detour. Unfortunately, this photograph doesn't show, you can't see the detail, and I didn't put a lot in. That white sign that you see, photograph left, is a big sign that says Westwood Baptist Church. Directly behind and sort of in the center is what is the roof of the Westwood Baptist Church. Oh, my heavens. Technology.
Sound man's idea.
Very well, thank you. That ain't better. Can you guys hear me? So, the Baptist Church set basically photograph right off camera. The flood came down through, and that big brown floodplain you see there was the parking lot and the yard around the church. Church is gone. It is now spread about 500 yards down from the back of that photograph, and all that remains is the roof just dropped. So that was one of the things that we'd seen. Stop took a couple photographs of that. When we did the detour, the first thing that happened was the storm hit, all the rain hit. Rain hit all the mountains, it ran down, hit all the valleys, all flooded out, there was all kinds of damage. 2-3 days later, all the wet hills started to slip, big mud slips. They came down and they cut roads off. If your house was in the way, they took your house with it. Some cases, it's real hilly territory, every bit is hillier more so than West Virginia, and in some cases it would just cut the roads off, take houses right down over a cliff. When we ran this 13-mile detour off the main highway, I quit counting places that they had repaired the roads. They're just coming in, dumping large chunks of rock, smaller rock, then number threes, number twos, and then they're kind of grading it over. I quit counting at 52. On a 13-mile detour, that's just places where the roads were cut in half. So it gives you a little bit of an idea of some of the destruction. And again, I'm north and west of Asheville, where the rivers had actually flooded and taken out the town. But nonetheless, the devastation is spread over a very large area, hundreds and hundreds of miles, and it's spotty. This young lady is Hannah. Hannah was one of the other homeowners. She had goats, llamas, chickens, and she lost three of her goats, a bunch of chickens. I lost count of the chickens. And again, her little farm had been flooded out. One of the things we had done on our first trip down was we were able to stand up about 180 feet of fencing with fence posts that the flood had literally laid over and buried in the ground. We were able to dig them out, stand them up, and put most of that fence back. So when we went down, cooperate please, when we went down, we were able to give her a goat shed and repair a bunch more of the fencing. And I also got to be a goat wrangler because the goats were running loose. They put them in a little fenced-in enclosure. Mike and Ed are busy building sheds, and every time one of the goats would get his horns stuck in one of the local fences, I'd have to go over and fish the goats out. So I got to be a goat wrangler. So this particular photograph is myself. Mike's wife, Debbie, came down from Ohio and joined us later in the week. And this would be Hannah, Jeff, and their two children, Debbie, Mike, and then myself on the far right. And this is one of the families we helped. Mike had gotten the idea Friday evening we were going to have a get-together and a picnic for the community. So he was inviting everybody. Hey, come on down. We're having a cookout. And we ended up with about 40 local people, including these families. And it turned out to be probably one of the better things that we had done. So that's one of the families. This is Bethany and her son Bailey. And again, Debbie, Mike, and myself. And this was the lady that lost all the chickens. And this is her land. Now, everything that you see there with all the cars up to about, she did not get any water in her house. Her house sits up on a little rise, but she had water up almost to the porch. So the whole area, 400 yards wide, was flooded. So these are two of the families that we were able to directly help, as well as John and Chrissy. See what we got. All right. Again, photographs don't show you a lot, but one of the things I was able to purchase when we went down, and Mike also helped me, we purchased about 35 of those Mr. Buddy propane heaters. Home Depot, shop at Home Depot, y'all, they were very helpful. Manager, I told him what was happening, he gave me a 35% discount on anything I bought for going down there. And then he just wrote it off as military discount for me. We were able to purchase 35 heaters, and we took down about 20-pound propane tanks filled, because one of the things that they were having immediately was difficulty getting fuel. So the red setting underneath the table are some of the propane heaters that we hadn't at that point distributed. We took them, and you'll hear stories about people going down, taking advantage, generators being given away, and then people turning around and selling them. Heaters, the same thing, clothing, food. So we were discriminating in who we gave them to. I want to make sure that you guys are going to be able to use the heater that we're giving you, the clothing. Mike also had a number of his neighbors show up, and they dropped off a large number of trash bags full of new clothing and coats and gloves and things for the kids. So on the tables is basically, if you're coming to the picnic, pick through there. If there's anything you want, it's yours. So we gave away a number of heaters, propane tanks that night. And then we had a cookout. We bought, I don't know, 35, 40 pounds of hamburgers and hot dogs, hot dog buns. All the neighbors brought. It was a potluck. The whole church gets together and everybody brings something. So she brings cake, she brings macaroni salad. But we didn't have any lights, so I was standing for about an hour with a flashlight. So it was a a picnic by flashlight. But there was a lot of food. It was a real good time. And one of the things that happened, as I said, we're down in Deep Gap, which is down in the bottom of a hill. And it's in a big valley. And the moon came out, and it started to come up. And it was a little bit cloudy. There are some trees in the yard. One of the fellows had taken some, I don't know where they get them, these multicolored lights. But at any rate, these lights changed colors, and he'd strung them in a couple of the trees to give us a little bit of ambiance, if you will, I guess. I don't know exactly what his idea was, but that is the moonrise over Deep Gap with lights in a tree. And the lights change. So I took about 35 or 40 pictures, but some of them came out, and again, they're digital. You keep some, you toss some, but some of them come out really well. So that and that is moonrise that evening, and not taking into account that it gets dark kind of early and you're down in a valley, it gets dark even earlier. This was probably taken around 6:30, 7 o'clock. That is the completed llama shed with the gate, a full gate that we were able to salvage the gate. We didn't have to purchase that. That is the completed llama shed. And that is the completed goat shed. So that's what we were able to accomplish in 6 days down in North Carolina. In addition, we distributed directly to two churches that we were comfortable with working with. I gave Joy 10 heaters, 10 propane tanks. She already had families in the church that were in need of them. And I took the last 4 heaters that we had remaining, and I dropped them off at Samaritan's Purse, along with some gift cards. We don't really have a food line around here local. But down there, there were a couple of them. So we'd gotten $25 gift cards for a food line, and we would hand those out to individuals. Waitress that took care of our meals. How's things going? Well, she's glad she's working. Her sister lost. We'd give her a gift card. So that's some of what we were able to accomplish. So we returned, and I still have some money left, and I decided I'd like to do something with this. Mike has hauled, he has a one-ton dually. He's hauled a couple loads of hay down there. And hay's a big need with the livestock, and they're also using it for insulation underneath homes and stuff. And apparently, they're using hay to build barriers around some of these tents that they're staying in, or packing the hay underneath the tents, because it provides insulation. So hay's a big deal. You don't think about it, but they're hauling hay from Pennsylvania, New York, Ohio, down into North Carolina, Tennessee. So through Mike and the hay lady, I meet the shed lady. The shed lady lives in Clarion. She is an architectural designer. I'm not quite sure exactly what all she does. 50 years old. Has a business doing architectural design, works with a number of contractors, saw the devastation and decided she was going to build sheds, not tiny homes, sheds. And because of the interaction with FEMA and local code enforcement, they are sheds. They're 8x16, and she decided to get together with her son-in-law and cleared out his barn, and they started building these sheds as kits. So I decided that I would go down with her and help build some of these sheds. And then we were going to distribute them to some of the people. She was initially planning on being down there for 4 or 5 days, and she was going to take 3 or 4 people. I was going to go down and meet her down there. So I took some additional propane, 6 additional, and you can kind of see them in the back of my truck, 2 burner Coleman stoves, 6 propane tanks, regulators, what have you, 6 sets of totes. I lost count, but there were like 80, 90 towels, washcloths, other things like that. And then Kim, who is just an evil person, said, these kids need Christmas gifts. So next thing you know, I'm in Five Below and I forget what it, a number of other stores, but Walmart and what have you. We bought soccer balls. We bought, Yahtzee games. We bought Rook, I believe it was. A variety of card games and little things like that. We also bought them little boxes of candy and a variety of other things so that when these kids get into their tiny homes, they've got something to do, a place to stay. Make it a little more like a home. So, Julie, shed lady, built 6 shed kits up in Clarion. Her best friend, Becky, Becky's husband drives tractor trailer. They load them on a flatbed and hauled them down, and this is how they arrived. On the back, you'll see a Christian flag, and you can't really see it in this photo, but they had an American flag fastened, Christian flag in the back, American flag fastened to both sides. Those flags were carefully removed, as carefully as we could, because they'd really stapled them on because of the wind. But we removed those flags and hung them in some of the sheds that we were able to build. So the guy that we went down, there's a building there, and the guy had a fairly decent-sized John Deere tractor with a set of forks on it, and he also had a Traco. So using the forks, we were able to unload everything and sort it out. There you go, American flag. So we were able to get everything offloaded and sorted out. Cooperate, please. There you go. This, and again, I apologize that the photos are kind of distant, but this is day one, which was Saturday. We arrived Saturday about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, midday. By end of day, we had unloaded all the shed kits, sorted them out, and started assembling the first kit. The floors came in 16 foot long, 8 foot wide, about approximately 12 inches deep, framed out of 2x12s, fully insulated, with metal underneath them as one unit. Underneath that were 2 6x6 skids, so they're heavy. But you can pick them up on skids, put them on a tilt bed, and haul them to a given location. So basically, we're giving you an 8x16x8 foot high tiny house. So that was end of day one. We had one shed half done, a little over. These are the shed kits laid out and distributed. That's the floor, and then we would stack the wall assemblies on top of them, get all the trusses that were pre-made, and get them all stacked out and make individual kits out of them so that I could get 2 or 3 people and say, go on over and build that building. This is what you need to do. They provided all the roofing materials, all the insulation. There is no plumbing in these places. There is no electric, and that is a code issue. They did not want to. They're building sheds because they didn't want to cross swords with the various authorities and, in some cases, FEMA. So this is another shed. The walls are up the backside. Each one of them has a door. One of the other issues that did come in, they were going to put a window in. They got some windows, and then they were told that the window has to be an egress window. In case there's a fire, you have to be able to get out the window. We have a couple heads nodding. An egress window is big enough that you and your kids can get out of the second floor in case there's a fire. It is, I forget the exact dimensions, I've had to cross swords with this a couple times, but it is big enough for a fireman in full bunker gear with an air pack on his back to be able to get in. If he can get in, then they assume you can get out. So they were required to replace a number of the windows that they had and put these egress windows in. Other than that, they have a door on them. Ceilings are insulated, and then there's a full metal roof put up there on top of the trusses. So this is interior wall and the floor setup, and the interior walls came down in 2 8-foot by 8-foot sections. The end wall is 8x8, and the walls came down pre-insulated, insulation already stapled in with plastic over it. A couple sheds in process of being built, being roofed. This is the inside of the shed. They are finished in drywall. Once everything is done, they had their own drywall. That already came down on the truck. Drywall went in, it's cut, and screwed up. The drywall was not finished, and there's a couple reasons for that. One, it's a shed. Two, it was a little too cold to be mudding and taping. It would have delayed by about 2 days each one of the sheds. So those joints are not mudded and taped. Its drywall stood up and fastened to the studs. We were working, and I don't have a photograph of it, but we were working in one of the sheds finishing off some of the drywall. The window was in. The door was in but standing open. We had two halogen floodlights standing there so we could see what we were doing. There were three of us in there working. We're down to T-shirts in 30-degree weather, and the sheds were warm. So the people living there will be warm. By the time you fire up a small in-wall heater that was provided or the two-burner stove, there'll be plenty of heat. The sheds are going to be warm. This is two of the ladies working, setting trusses using nail guns, and I'm back here behind the camera because I ended up being a nail gun instructor and truss alignment instructor. But this is two of the ladies up there. So once again, ladies, you can set trusses, and you can nail them down. This is Caden. Caden was 9 years old. He was the son of Matthew. He's the grandson of Julie the shed lady. Caden climbed all over everything. Caden knows his tools. He knows what to do, and he knows how to use air nailers. So Caden was all over the place, and he was the, I'm old, can you run over and get that guy? And he did. And I could ask him to go get a pair of lineman's pliers, and he knew lineman's pliers from channel locks. He knew what he was looking for. Very helpful. But that would be Caden's head sticking up above the trusses, and he was all over the place. So we got three sheds built in the yard. We loaded one shed on a flatbed, a tilt bed, and delivered it up to a guy's house, and we assembled it right in his yard. So there you can kind of see, and the tool trailers in the back are things that they dragged down from Clarion. I didn't have a trailer with me. I just brought my truck with tools in it. And then the outbuildings that you see are the area that the flat area, the lay-down area we had to build and work in. The weather cooperated for the most part. We had real decent weather, cool but decent weather to build in. Those are shed kits 6, 5, and 4 laid out on the ground as we're working on 3. This is pictures of, I think his name was David. This is pictures at the house on Saturday, the last day that we were there. Saturday, Monday. I apologize. This would be Monday. This guy had a storm come through. Had the storm hit. He's up on a hill. His house sits up on a hill. And it must have been whipping around pretty good. It must have been just short of a tornado because he's got oak trees down. We count 15 trees in his yard down that are over 20 to 24 inches in diameter. And the oaks down there generally have a real wide root. They don't have a real deep root ball, and it just peeled the root balls out. So there are 15 to 20 trees down in there. The last tree that came down landed on top of the roof of his house, cracked the roof of his house. He can't run a chainsaw. He couldn't get anybody up there to run a chainsaw, and he couldn't get the tree off the roof of his house. It was there for about 2 weeks. It rained. Rain came in the house. He's got all kinds of interior water damage, and he can't live in the place. You can get in. You can get out. You can go in and get the pots out of the kitchen. The house is not destroyed, but the roof's going to have a lot of truss work and then be replaced. In addition, he lost a lot of drywall and other things inside. So this is another picture of some of the trees down. And that is where his house is. That's his house. The tree is now off, but if you look in the photograph on the roof, you can see a white spot. That's where they finally did get a tarp over it and some plywood over it. That was about 3 weeks in. 4 weeks in, this is about a week before we got there, FEMA showed up, looked at it, This is an honest, he said this is who it was there, FEMA story. FEMA showed up, came in, did a bunch of paperwork, said obviously you can't live in this house, and he has two boys, he's a prison guard, he has two boys and they're young, and they're staying at his mother's, I believe, which is about 6-8 miles away. He comes back up to the house periodically. So they come in, they said you obviously can't live in that, and they had an electrician come up while they were there and cut his electric service, and it's just laying on the ground. So I got there before I'd heard this story, and I walk around, and there's the transformers on the pole, there's live service laterals laying on the ground, well, there's service laterals, cables, and they're obviously cut off, and the service mast has been, somebody grabbed a hold of it, snapped it off, and pulled it down so they can't reconnect it. That was FEMA, because they don't want him living in the house, and they didn't want him taking a chance of going back in there. So that one he did tell me was what happened. So where this is the back porch of the house, and behind the pile of mud in the front of the picture is where we're going to end up setting the shed on his pavement. That is the tree that came down and landed on top of his house, and I didn't see the whole tree. That right there is about 24 inches in diameter, and those rounds are cut off the tree. They eventually did manage to get somebody up there with a saw that was able to cut that off. This was the morning we got there. This was the mist laying in the valley. More mist. And again, a couple more of the trees that are down in his yard. Now, as I said, he had trees down heading south. He had trees down heading east. He had the tree that came down on his house was heading east. He also had two trees going north. So the wind had to be whipping around pretty good. One of the trees that fell, probably a 30-inch oak, fell. It was planted right next to his driveway. When it fell, it peeled about half to two-thirds of his driveway up. His driveway's a big curve, goes up the hill like that. Halfway up the hill, part of the driveway's ripped out. I managed to get my four-wheel drive truck up there by throwing it up on the bank, putting it sideways and going up through. We got the other truck up. But how are we going to get this shed up? We're going to have to stop at the hole, which is about 4 feet deep. And I'm going to have to stop at the hole and haul this up. Sorry I'm talking so long, guys. But at any rate, local hillbilly in North Carolina come up, looked at it, said, I think I can get up through there. Back to tilt bed right up through that hole, put the truck up there. So that's a shed kit. And we're offloading it. Those two planks on the ground are 2x6s that were wet. My suggestion, throw the 2x6s down there. We'll slide the shed off. And then we can just take a bar and spin it around into the position we need. And then we can go ahead and break it down. And it worked really well. So wet wood makes good slides. That's one of the few selfies I took. And that was to give you an idea of the location of the shed next to his house. And Kim wanted to know that I'd actually gone down there and done something. So that is photographic evidence that I was at least on site. This is the inside of the shed. That is Matthew and Julie, the shed lady. Matthew is the son-in-law. This is the inside of the one shed that we're going to distribute. That would be one of the American flags off the truck. Behind them, you will see the bunk that was built. That's about 3.5 feet off the ground. It's a 4x8 bunk for the kids to stay in. Underneath would be a place for mom and dad to put a futon or something similar. This is the family, and you can't really see it clearly. I'm in the white shirt in the front. Directly behind me is Dave, the homeowner, the guy that got the shed, and his two sons. And then off to the far right is Caden. The rest of them are the crew that we worked with. This is there was a local Lutheran shelter down there, and this is the room that we were able to stay in. Really nice facility for us. They just, if you're coming down to work, we'll give you a room. And then this is the front entry to the place. They had a full kitchen there. We were able to cook. I'd taken some food from frozen foods from Sam's Club, and Julie brought down turkey and stuff, so we were quite well fed. And let's see what we got here.
The last one that is your video.
Oh, that video? All right.
She can play that.
I'm not going to worry about the video at this point. It's a video coming from the Lutheran Center, dropping down and around, and there were a lot of trees down. You get a little bit of an idea. This is it. So this is taken from my windshield. I'm just holding the cell phone up and dropping down off. This was taken about 6:30 in the morning. I'm following another truck down. It's a back dirt road up into this little Lutheran Center, but most of the trees that are down on both sides you can't see, and then at one point there's a bridge washed out, so as I get down a little further you're going to see where you have to drive through a creek to get back out and then up over the hill to get back out to the main road. So this was primarily included to give you a little bit of an idea, and again it's hard to see, but there's trees down on both sides of the road everywhere, and most of them have been cut. Somebody came in with a track hoe, cut them up and just pushed them to open the road up. So they're still sitting there. They haven't been touched. This is about 3 weeks ago, so this is 7 weeks after the storm, and they managed to get roads back open. So that gives you, and there's the stream coming up that we're going to drive through. It's not massive, but still in all, it's about a foot and a half deep. So you have to drive through there. There was a bridge there. Now there's a stream. So, since this has happened, and since Rob asked me to come and speak to you, a couple things have occurred. I am contemplating going back down. I've got some things that I have to take care of here. I still have some of the money remaining that I'd collected, a significant amount, enough to be of significant help. I'm probably going to distribute a portion of that directly to Samaritan's Purse. The other one I will probably do is distribute directly to Mercy Chefs, who are still on the ground, and you've been seeing their ads, I'm sure, on television. In addition, Kim came across an organization this morning, and I'm going to look into them, but they're called, SH Brotherhood, and it's shbrotherhood.org, and I would encourage all of you to go to that website and look at them. It's a very Christian organization, and they are shed shippers. They ship all over the United States, tractor trailers and hot shots, one tons with flatbeds. And he has a video posted from 4 days ago on Facebook, but you can, I believe, also see it on their website. They're still finding vehicles with bodies in them. Buried. The last one they found bear tracks going over to a pile. And they went over with a machine and dug the pile open. There was a car inside of it with three bodies in it. They're still finding bodies. There are still people living in tents. It's cold down there. So that's a concern. There's still things that need to be done. The other thing that occurred, Kim called me in. You guys are familiar with Samaritan's Purse, I'm sure. And Franklin Graham has a Facebook page. And I'm going to recommend that you go directly to Franklin Graham's Facebook page. And when I went there this morning, he has a video posted. It's a 28-minute video. It's called Storms of Life. And it is video with video clips. Their home port is right near there. So he got local video clips of some of the floods happening and the families. Some of the stories that you hear on the news. After I watched that, I said I didn't do enough. It's something that you need to see. The immediacy of the devastation, the power of what a flood will do, the power of what these storms will do. We live in a fairly protected little enclave here in western Pennsylvania and Washington, where the storms follow the Ohio River up. They hit the Mon and the Allegheny, and they head up north. But for some reason, the little corner of Washington where we are is fairly well protected from the majority of storms. And that's a blessing from the Lord. Just is. That video, Storms of Life, is 28 minutes. I'm going to recommend that each one of you go and spend 25, 28 minutes and sit and watch it. And hear the stories of the people that lived through it. The families that we spent time at that picnic with, we talked to, we loved on, we prayed with. Our people that went through that and were telling us kind of what happened. And it could be any one of y'all. It really could. So, Paul was a missionary. And all the different churches that he had helped to sponsor supported him in one way or another. Y'all have supported me. I do what I can. I am so very appreciative of what you've been able to do to help. I am so appreciative. And I want to thank you for that. If there's any questions, please. I'm sorry, repeat that. That was a week and a half ago. And I have a few things to do, but I'm contemplating going back down, possibly in January. I'm not certain yet. There's no sense in going down if I don't have something specific that I can do to help. And at this point, Samaritan's Purse is planning on starting rebuild. I don't know exactly what they're doing right now to alleviate the immediate situation with people still living in tents. But I would like to try and get down and help alleviate some of the immediate suffering, get the folks through the winter. Kim keeps track of this more than I do on Facebook. I really don't do much on Facebook. But I think it was 2 weeks ago. There was a family found that one of the children and a baby had frozen to death during the night. So this is real. This is current. There is still a great need. Well, I hope that you guys think that I've done well with your funds, that I've represented you well.